Decision Hour. I'm your host, Adam Berg. Folks, I got a great interview lined up for you today. I'm really excited about this gentleman that I have on the show for you today. He is recognized internationally as a keynote speaker. He's also the author of Your Leadership Legacy, Become the Leader You Were Meant to Be. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, retired Lieutenant Colonel Oakley McCullough. Sir, welcome to the show.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Adam.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. You know, you and I, we talked a couple of times offline, and we were introduced by our friend Jerry, a fellow veteran and whatnot. So I'm blessed to have you on, and I'm excited about our conversation today. Before we dive into that, tell my listeners just a little bit about you.
Yeah, so like we were talking about a couple times, I grew up in Northern Illinois, just a dumb farm boy out in the middle of the cornfield. Played baseball, basketball, football in high school, captain of my sports teams. I was president of student government, student council, all that kind of stuff. Went off to the college, got my degree in history, and also graduated from Army ROTC.
Nice.
So I did 23 years in the Army. My first 5 years, I was an infantry officer. My last 18, I was an armored cav officer. Got three deployments, operational deployments. I got Desert Shield, Desert Storm. I was in Bosnia. I was in Kosovo. Jeez. And then I've done a couple of hurricane relief operations here in the United States. One in Charleston for Hugo and one down here in Florida at Homestead for Andrew. And when I retired from the Army in 2009, I ran a food bank for a couple of years. One of the largest food banks in the country, covered 52 counties along the Gulf Coast, from the whole Gulf Coast of Mississippi, the whole Gulf Coast of Alabama, and about a third of the panhandle of Florida. Took over that job about a month before the BP oil spill, so I was a little bit busy during that time. Jeez. And then last 12 years, I've been recruiting for Army ROTC here in Daytona Beach, Florida. Retired from that job in October, and now I'm just concentrating on getting out and spreading my message about servant leadership during my keynote talks and through my book and through podcasts.
Well, first off, sir, thank you for your service as a veteran myself. I appreciate everything you've done, and you've seen quite a bit, and you said something there, servant leadership, and that's one of the things you focus on. For the listeners, what does it mean to be a servant leader?
Yeah, there's a lot of misconceptions out there. You know, when I tell some people that I believe in servant leadership, one of the first things they say is, well, I don't want to be a servant leader because I don't want people walking all over me. And I said, then you obviously don't know what servant leadership is about. It really is a very simple thing, but I think it's very powerful. It's not about you, and yet it's all about you. And when I say that, I always get somebody who says, well, Colonel McCullough, how can it not be about me, but all about me? So it's not about you and the title that you get or the privileges you get or that you get more pay and you live in a nicer house, get to drive a nicer car. Let's face it, leaders get those things generally, and that's okay.
Right.
As long as that's not the only reason you want to be the leader. If that's the only reason you want to be the leader, please go do something else.
Right.
You're not going to be a good one. It's all about you and how you treat and empower the people that you have the privilege to lead. And it is a privilege,
yes,
to be the leader. And how you run your organization. That's what leadership is about. Servant leadership is about. It guarantees that you are going to have to make people do things they don't want to do because it's in their best interest, even if they don't know it is at that moment. Eventually, they'll figure out that it was. But that's what it's all about, is taking care of the people that you have the privilege to lead.
So how does, if you're in a servant leadership position and you're trying to convince somebody that this is what's best for them, how does a leader go about doing that?
So I always went, the way I went about it was, I would say, okay, let's stop and let's take a look at the big picture. You know, right now, this may not seem to be what you really want to do, but let's think down the road, what may come up that where this is going to become important. And the thing I used to use that on a lot of times when I think about that example, you know, in my time in the Army and even out of my Army, when I was at the food bank, I set standards about something we were going to do, and we're going to do it to this standard. And when I was in the Army, I'd tell my my soldiers, I'd say, today, this is what we're going to do. And this is the standard we're going to get to. And if we got to that standard at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we were done. If we were still working on that standard at 10 o'clock at night, we were still there getting it done. And, you know, a lot of times I could tell they were getting disgruntled about being there late. And I said, look, someday you're going to want to, you're going to be happy that we got to this standard. Right. And I've had soldiers come back to me and say, sir, you're absolutely right. I'm glad we were trained to that standard when this happened. So, you got to keep the big picture. What is it right now? It may not make a difference, but somewhere down the road, because you know that somewhere down the road, they're going to need to meet that standard or be able to do what you're asking them to do. Then that's what you got to convey to them to make them understand why we're doing what we're doing today.
And you can incorporate that really in all aspects of life.
Any profession. Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You've been in a lot of different leadership positions in your career. What's the hardest decision you've had to make in a leadership position?
Well, personally, it was doing the right thing when I knew it wasn't going to be in my best interest. I had to stand up to a couple of my bosses in the Army that wanted me to do something that I knew wasn't the right thing to do, and I refused to do it. And I paid a price for it. There's a reason I retired a lieutenant colonel, but that's okay. I like who I see in the mirror every morning right. when I'm shaving. You know, it's funny. I had a buddy that I went to West Point with who retired a two-star general. And when I wrote my book, he read it and we reconnected after he read the book. And he said, you could have retired a two-star general if you just played the game. And I said, Tim, not willing to play the game. Sorry. I'm happy to have retired a lieutenant colonel. So for me personally, that was the hardest thing. Standing up and doing the right thing, even when you knew in the end it wasn't going to be in your best interest, but it was in the best interest of one of my soldiers or one of the people working for me or for the organization. The hardest decision I probably ever had to make that affected other people was probably in Kosovo. I had some new lieutenants that came in and I had to send them out probably before I really would have wanted to do some things. And it ended up okay. They came out of it alive, but they saw some things and had to do some things that they probably weren't ready to do.
It's always tough, especially when it comes to when you're in theater in a combat situation.
Yeah. The old saying, mission first, people always, is absolutely true. I mean, we had to accomplish the mission.
Yeah.
Would I would like to have had another month with those new lieutenants? Yeah. Absolutely. But couldn't. So we had to do what we had to do with what we had.
Sir, when you're talking about, the leadership and the decision-making stuff, and you'd mentioned that, you retired as a lieutenant colonel, and you said that your friend said you had to be willing to play the game. And I get it. There's a lot of, how do I say this? There's a lot of politics sometimes that are involved in decision making when it comes to certain organizations. I'll just put it that way. But I'm still pretty close with a lot of people that are still in the military, and I've seen and I've watched leadership from like even my era into what is, what's going on now. Is there such a thing as toxic leadership? I've heard that phrase thrown around quite a bit over the last couple of years. And can you explain, is there such a thing as toxic leadership, and could you provide an example?
Yeah, I believe there is. I believe, my last 15 years associated with the Army, my last 3 years on active duty, I ran an Army ROTC program. In the last 12 years, I've recruited for an Army ROTC program. And I've had my hand in commissioning over 580 lieutenants over those 15 years.
Wow.
And I stay in contact with a lot of them, or they stay in contact with me. And a lot of them, unfortunately, in the last 5 or 6 years, certainly, they're getting out after their five-year requirement. When I ask them, you know, they'll contact me and say, "Sir, I'm getting out of the Army. I'm going to do this." And when I ask them why, and they say, because of leadership. Because they felt like the person wasn't taking care of them, didn't care about them, was only concerned about their own career, trying to make it to that 2-star general, doing anything they had to do it. And some of it, not good stuff, you know, probably close to being, I won't say illegal, but probably not morally correct.
Right.
And they just said, I can't stay. I can't do that. Which makes me feel good that maybe I put some good character traits in them a little bit, helped to do that. But I think I see that a lot right now, where we're seeing a shift into a lot more of the authoritarian micromanaging leadership, not just in the military, but in this country, I think.
Right.
A lot of businesses are doing that. And I think that's why you've got this great resignation going on in this country, is people are fed up with it. They're not going to stay where they're not taken care of.
Right.
If you're not providing them, you know, I'm not saying you baby them or you coddle them, but you got to take their interest into heart.
Right.
You know, if you got a leader who doesn't ask you what your aspirations are, then you got to, I got to wonder what that leader's really doing.
Yeah.
Because that's part of a leader's job, is to help to make you the best you can be at whatever it is you're doing, and to reach whatever level you want to reach. If you just want to come to work every day, draw a paycheck and go home, that's okay.
Right. Yeah.
But if you want to someday be a leader, then I, as your leader, need to know that, or should know that, so I can help you get there. And I don't see that happening right now.
Yeah. It's, and I'm glad you brought up, it's not just the military. I mean, you're seeing it so much more. The turnover rate in corporate America right now is very, very, probably at an all-time high.
Oh, it is.
Because you don't see.
I saw a stat the other day. I was at a keynote. I was the keynote speaker at an event, and I sat through a couple of the other speeches, the talks, and somebody threw up a slide, and it said 53% of the people who start at your company will not be there in 5 years.
And that's a serious, I mean, that's a high, high number. Why is that? And it's, you know, they say a person never leaves a job because they don't like it. They leave it usually because of the person that they work for.
That, I think that's, a lot of that is true. I think another thing that's happening right now is we're not providing people with the training. You know, we're getting people in and expecting them to meet a standard that we're going to hold them to, but we never trained them to that standard.
Right.
And people are getting fed up with it, and they're going to other places, and hopefully the place they go is better. But if it isn't, they'll leave that place too.
It's like when you come in, you got to develop a trust with those people, right?
Yeah.
How hard
leadership is about people and trust.
Right.
Period.
So how hard is it as a leader to develop that trust with your troops or with your employees?
Oh, it's not hard. Doing it is hard. Right. What you have to do isn't hard, just like leadership. But here's the advice I gave every young lieutenant that was leaving, and the advice I give CEOs out there now when I go around and do my talk, my leadership talk. Building that trust with the people who work for you is not hard. Starts with this: getting out and getting to know them. Get out from behind your desk and walk around and talk to people. Nobody wants to follow somebody who sits behind their desk all day. Sorry. Now, I got it. Leaders got to be behind their desk a certain amount of time because there's things you got to do. I got that. But every opportunity you get, go out and talk to people. And the advice I give them is this: go out and find one person every day, one new person every day in your organization, and find out something new about that person. Not about work, about their personal life. What's their spouse's name? What's their kid's name? What sports do their kids play? What's their hobbies? What do they like? What don't they like? Get to know them. That gives two things. Number one, it starts to build that trust. You got to be willing to give up some of your information too. That's part of it, and why some people don't want to do it. And the other part of that is to your benefit, is now you know a little bit about that person. And when it comes time to assign jobs and tasks and projects, you'll be able to know whether or not that's the right project for that person. If you don't know that person, you're going to give him a project or her a project that maybe doesn't fit them.
Yeah.
But so get out and get to know them. Another way to do it, I had a boss who retired, a 3-star general, who was a good mentor of mine and a good servant leader. And he used to tell me, Oak, I don't care how high up in the organization you get, never, ever, ever turn down a chance to go get your own cup of coffee. He said, when you do that, two things happen. Number one, people realize you're no better than they are. You got to go get your own cup of coffee just like they do. And number two, he said, if you're lucky, you got two or three different ways to get to the coffee pot and back to your office. And along the way, you stop and talk to people.
I love that. You said that, and that was a mentor that told you that?
It was a mentor.
So that actually leads into my next question is how important, you know, being in a leadership position, how important is mentorship as a leader?
Yeah, well, you can't develop good young leaders if we don't mentor them. I'm sorry. At least not easily. They may learn, they'll have to learn all those lessons the hard way.
Right.
It is a lot nicer for them if they don't have to learn all those lessons that we learned the hard way. So I think I tell people, look, have a mentor and be a mentor. I don't care how high up you get, you still need a mentor. And when I say that, I get a lot of CEOs and presidents of companies that'll say, well, it's lonely at the top. I said, only if you let it be. I said, first of all, you can always go out and find another person who's a CEO or president of another company that you can talk to and develop a relationship with. And because you mentor them, they mentor you, because you probably got some skills they need and they got some that you need. And then you have to mentor the younger people. When I go around and I talk to CEOs, presidents, leaders at all levels, and one of the first things I ask them is, who are you mentoring in your organization? And if they tell me no, then I got to doubt whether or not they're a leader. They may be a boss, but they're not a leader, because leaders produce more leaders. Period.
I had an NCO tell me once I was a young buck sergeant, and he said, pick somebody and mentor them and teach them how to replace you, because eventually you're going to move up and they're going to take your place.
Yeah. We're all going to move on.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And it was kind of like, and how they do is a reflection on how you mentored them. So how,
absolutely,
you know,
that's your legacy.
Yeah.
Not what you did.
No,
that's part of your legacy.
Right,
in the real world, results do matter. Okay. Maybe in fantasy land where everybody gets a trophy and everybody's a winner, maybe not, but in the real world, results do matter. So a small part of your legacy is what you did, but the largest part of your legacy is that next group of leaders that you're helping to produce. Absolutely. I believe that 100%, you know, and the other piece of that is that I remind all these leaders is you got to understand when you got to put your ego aside. We all have egos.
Yeah.
Anybody who tells you they don't have an ego is lying to you. Okay. We all do. And we want people to have an ego. That's a good thing.
Right.
Because that's what drives us to be successful. That's what drives us to be the best at what we do. So we want people, especially leaders, to have egos. But you got to understand when to put it aside. Some of the best advice I've ever gotten were from people that worked for me. You know, Master Sergeant David Powell, who worked for me when I ran my ROTC program, he worked for me. He was probably a better leader than I was. And I learned a lot from him. My first platoon sergeant, when I was a brand new lieutenant, Sergeant First Class Pinson. I'm a 24-year-old lieutenant. He'd been in the Army for 23 years. He'd been in the Army almost as long as I'd been alive. Why would I not listen to somebody like that? But to do that, you got to put your ego aside.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that, because I've told you offline, you know, one of the things that people ask, you know, my son's in ROTC, and I told him, I said, he asked me, Pop, what's the best piece of advice you can give me? I said, when you get commissioned, you go to your platoon sergeant and you learn everything that you possibly can from the enlisted person. And you know, growing up, he saw that me being an enlisted guy. And I said, because here's the thing, we would get new lieutenants coming in and, you know, you poke at them a little bit and whatnot, but it was all for fun. But at the same time, it was to teach them, you might be younger than us, but if you pay attention, you'll be one of the greatest leaders that come out of here, because
Absolutely.
We want you to succeed, because we know if we go downrange, you're the one that's going to be telling us what we need to do, and we want to be able to trust you. So I told him, I said, the easiest thing you can do is you butter up to that E7, and you just become a sponge.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, so mentorship is good. I like that. Do you think, you know, we talked a little bit offline about professional development, and I kind of want to gear towards that a little bit right now, because I see that in the corporate world quite a bit. A lot of people leaving, opportunities aren't really there for people anymore, or you see companies cutting back, and usually the first thing that goes is professional development. And then,
right.
and then we wonder why the turnover rate gets to be so high. What do you say about professional development, whether it's in the military or corporate?
Yeah, so I think it's huge and it's very important. So a couple things on that. Certainly the current leaders have to develop a professional development program for your junior leaders to help develop them. Because like you said earlier, at some point, old guys like us are going away and somebody's got to replace us. So you got to prepare them for that.
Right.
But you also have to have a professional development for the people who aren't in a leadership position. And this is why I think it's so important. And I see it all the time. So if I come and start working for you and I have aspirations to be a leader someday, and you don't provide me a pathway there that I can see there's a way for me to get to be a leader, then eventually I'm leaving and going to somewhere that's going to give me that pathway. So you're going to lose your best people.
Yeah.
Because you didn't provide that for them. And the other piece of it is, I may never become a leader in your organization, but every piece of training you give me to make me a leader someday is only going to benefit you and me. So why not do it?
Yeah.
And it isn't that hard, and it doesn't cost that much money. You know, that's one of the reasons it's cut right away, is because it's hard to put a dollar figure on a professional development program. What is it bringing to me? Believe me, it's bringing a lot. You may not be able to put a dollar figure on it, but it's bringing you a lot.
I would go as far as to say it's priceless.
It is. Absolutely. So you got to do that. You have to provide that for them, or you're going to lose those people.
And that's a good thing.
And pick any sports team, any profession. I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
Who are the ones that are consistently the best? It's not the ones who go out and buy that and get that free agent.
No.
And they may be best that year, but next year when that free agent goes somewhere else, you're not anymore. The best sports teams are the ones who build from the bottom up, and corporations are no different.
I love that. And it's funny because I've and I'm sure you have too, you've been in certain companies and you see people leaving. I've been in companies where people have left, or I have left because there was nowhere for me to go. And when you ask to, hey, what can I do to get to the next level? You get the deer in the headlight look, like,
yeah.
Why would you want to go to the next level? I was like, well, I certainly don't want to be here the rest of my life. That's why, you know, sir, we're coming up on time. And before we do, I want to ask you another question. You authored a book, Your Leadership Legacy, Becoming the Leader You Were Meant to Be. Walk us through the process. Did you just wake up one morning and you were just like, I got to write a book, this is what's going to happen, and just start penning it? Walk us through that process and why this.
Yeah, so I guess you got to go back to when I was running my ROTC program. I was also doing my own recruiting for that program. So I was going around talking to high school kids and college students, and I would always ask them, you know, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? And they'd tell me what profession they were looking at. You know, I want to be an engineer or an accountant or a doctor or whatever. And inevitably somebody would say, and I want to be a leader. And I'd say, well, great. World needs more leaders. I said, what does that mean? What does it take? And you get that deer in the headlights look. You know, they had no idea what it meant. They probably wanted to be a leader for the wrong reason, because they wanted that title and privileges and better pay. And that's okay, again, if you want those things, but that can't be the only reason you want to be the leader. And so I came up with this talk that I do about leadership, what it takes to be a good leader. Don't mention theory at all in my talk or in my book. I talk about everyday things that everyday leaders can do to be a better leader and empower their people, make their people better. And so I'd been given that talk since probably 2004, I guess. And eventually I knew I wanted to put it in a book. I wanted to write a book about it. And I kept telling myself I was going to do that. And then one day, my wife and I and her mother and two other people that live in the condo here with us, we went to this motivational / how do we revitalize the Catholic Church talk at our Catholic Church. And the guy who was speaking was fantastic. And it was 3 hours long. He didn't speak all 3 hours. He spoke for about 45 minutes and we took a 15 minute break, and then 45 and 15 and then 45. And every time we took a break, I went up and I picked his brain, because he was doing what I wanted to do, get out and talk to people about leadership and motivation. And he gave me some great ideas and some great nuggets. And after the last one, we talked a little bit and then we were kind of done. We said our goodbyes and he started to walk away. And then he turned around and he said, Oak, have you written a book? And I said, well, I'm thinking about it. He said, stop thinking about it and write it. So I went home that night. That was the 15th of February, 2020. I went home that night, wrote out the table of contents. The next morning I started writing on it, and I published it on the 12th of February, 2021. So just under a year from the time I started till I published it. And I was glad I did. I knew I wanted to write it, and I guess I just needed permission to write it. I don't know, but I'm glad that he pushed me and gave me that talk. And so I was really happy that it came out and I wrote it when I was writing it, I thought I was writing it only for young people, aspiring leaders, people who just started out in leadership positions. And I think, you know, I hit that mark. And if you read the reviews, I think most people would say that I did hit that. But the other part that I did that I wasn't really expecting is that it also was good for people who had been in leadership positions for 20, 30, 40 years. I had a Marine Corps 2-star general who read it and linked and got connected with me on LinkedIn and sent me a message. And he said, you know, Oak, I didn't learn a whole lot of new things from your book, but I learned a few new techniques that I can use. He said, but this is what I really took out of your book. I was reading along and I'd come across something and I'd say to myself, you know, I used to do that really well and I don't do that so well anymore. Maybe I need to dedicate some time to get back to doing that.
Nice.
And I think we all need that nudge. Yeah. I don't care how long you've been a leader. Every once in a while, we just got to have that nudge to remind us what it was that made us a good leader that we have forgotten to do, and then we need to get back to doing.
I love that. Oak, where can they find the book?
So it's on Amazon. It's in a hardcover, paperback, ebook, and Audible. And I read the Audible. The only other voice on there is my wife's. She read the foreword because she wrote that, and she read about the author, but the rest of it is mine. And so you can get it on Amazon. If you want a signed copy, then you go to my website. I got my email, my phone number on there. You can get in contact with me and we'll figure out how to get you a signed copy if you want that.
And what's the website? What's your website?
www.ltcoakmccullough.com.
Perfect. And folks, we're going to have all of his contact information in the show notes below. Oak, before I let you go, I got one more question for you.
Okay.
You're on a show called The Decision Hour, and we have to make decisions every day.
Absolutely. That's what leaders do.
Name a time in your life where your feet were on the line and you have to make that decision. What is it? And what's the atmosphere like?
Oh, wow. A lot of those, but this is the one that comes first to my mind, popped in my mind right away. I was in Kosovo. I was the S3, I was the operations officer. And we had platoons all over the place, stationed doing different things. And we were butted up right against the Russian sector. So you had the Russian army, and they manned a checkpoint in a Serb sector. And then there was a 3 mile long no man's land. And then we had a checkpoint in an Albanian sector. And there were Albanian cars would come through the Russian checkpoint, and they would beat them up and steal from them and all kinds of things. And it was happening all the time. And then one day I was out doing something with another platoon somewhere else. And my scout platoon leader, who was manning that checkpoint, calls me up on the radio and says, "Sir, you got to come to the checkpoint." And I said, "Well, I'm busy right now. Can it wait?" He said, "No, you have to come right now." And I had a lot of respect for this young lieutenant. And I said, "Okay." So I dropped what I was doing and I went over there, and Russians had almost beaten these 3 guys to death. I mean, they were in bad shape, and they had broken all the windows in the car and slashed all the seats and stole everything from them. I said, "Okay, this has got to stop." So I told my platoon, scout platoon, I said, "Get your guys, let's go." And so we drove over to the Russian checkpoint, and here's their lieutenant there. And so you got to understand, I don't speak Russian.
Right.
He didn't speak English. I had my Albanian interpreter with me because I was in an Albanian town when my platoon leader called. He had a Serb who was translating for him. So I would say something to my Albanian, who would then translate it to Serb, to the Serb Albanian or translator, who would then translate it to Russian. So just imagine this circle going around. It was like a circus. So we were talking, and I was trying to explain to him that this was unacceptable, and he mouthed off to me some way. I don't remember exactly what it was. And so I said, "This is stopping, and it's going to stop right now." And I may have said a few other words.
Colorful words.
And my Albanian interpreter said, "Do you really want me to say that?" Every word of it. And so he did. It went around, and I'm talking to my scout platoon leader while it's going around. And it gets to the lieutenant, and he says something to his soldier who's up on a BMP behind the machine gun, and he locks and loads the machine gun and points it at me. I thought, I'm going to die right here. And I turn around, and I said to my scout platoon leader, I said, "If he shoots me, then 2 things have to happen. That lieutenant and that guy on that machine gun need to die. Whatever else happens, I don't care. But those 2 things got to happen." Well, luckily for us, right then, my counterpart, the Russian major, drives up. And he calms his guys down. I calm my guys down. And he and I started talking. And he said, "I'll look into it." And 2 weeks later, we left. 2 weeks later, he came and found me and said, "You're absolutely right. The thing that lieutenant was doing was horrible. And he is now in Chechnya." And we got a new lieutenant in charge of that checkpoint. That major and I stayed in contact for years. He didn't speak English. I didn't speak Russian. His wife spoke English. And of course, in the American Army, you can always find somebody who speaks Russian.
Right.
So we wrote letters back and forth for a number of years until he was killed in Chechnya a few years later. But during our time there, about every 2 weeks, we'd have lunch together, either at the Russian base or our base. And then we stayed in contact for a couple of years until he was killed.
Wow. What a great story. That is wow. A little bit of a pucker factor moment there, but yeah.
That's a little bit.
That's a great story. Well, sir, I appreciate your time today coming on and talking with my listeners. And again, folks, we're going to have all Oak's information, where you can get his books, his website, everything in the show notes below. So, sir, thank you again. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me on, Adam. This was fantastic.
Absolutely. Folks, that's all the time we got. Make sure you go check out our parent company as well, Heroes Media Group. Go to heroesmediagroup.com. Go check out all the shows and new things that are going on over there. Until next time, you've been listening to The Decision Hour.